Welcome to the Doctor Who 1960s Retrospective, exploring episodes from 1965 to 1967. Sit back on a journey of the past, fasten your seatbelts as we visit the past and adventures in the classic BBC long-running science fiction series of Doctor Who.
Hello and welcome to the True License podcast. Tonight we are reviewing the Dalek invasion of Earth, 2150 AD, and the floor's open, guys. What are your opening thoughts?
This is Invasion Earth, 2150 AD. This is Invasion Earth, 2150 AD. Planet Earth has been bombarded by meteorites, subjected to cosmic rays, savagely invaded by men of steel who have no flesh to pierce, no blood to spill. This is 2150 AD, the year when human beings are turned into living dead men, robo-men, the underground slaves of the world's new dictators. 2150 AD, a year that will thrill you and terrify you. No! A year of rebellion, as a brave handful hold out in a last-ditch battle for human survival.
Attention! Resist! And you will be exterminated!
Leading the resistance fighters is Peter Cushing, his most thrill-making role.
Come along!
Aided by Bernard Cribbins, a reluctant traveller into the dangerous future.
Have you seen the girl? Listen, where's the girl?
Ray Brooks, the boy with the knack. Who doesn't find life so easy in the year 2150 AD? Andrew Keir, Jill Kazin, Roberta Tobey. All of them fighting to the death a mobilised band of burnt-out human beings, robo-men. With their flying saucers and an army of bloodless, fleshless metal monsters. This is Invasion Earth, 2150 AD. A shattering look into the future.
They're no good! The bombs are no good!
I bloody loved it.
I really, really enjoyed the whole film. I didn't even look at my phone. Usually I look at my phone through some films and that, but this one kept me glued from beginning and right to the end. And I tell you what, I think it reminded me so much of the Dalek, of Susan's last adventure on Earth in that time. I don't know if anybody agrees with me, but it's when they land and they see the buildings and where is everybody. They don't know where everybody is and they start to fight with people. Oh, honestly, I was so excited. I was just like a little kid all over again. And Peter Cushing as the Doctor was just fantastic. I mean, he literally sounded like the first Doctor, I thought, as well. I mean, it was just the way he was, his mannerisms and everything was so good. It was amazing. And the Daleks were like scarier as ever as well. And there was a lot of PVC costumes going on as well. Yeah, I don't know if anyone noticed that. I don't know how much PVC they used in those costumes.
Well, I'm glad to hear that somebody who's more well-versed in Doctor Who enjoyed this movie, because I enjoyed it, and I thought it was better than the first Doctor Who film with Peter Cushing, but that one was kind of slow-moving and a little bit of a slog. This one, I feel, had a lot more going on, but I wasn't sure if I was enjoying it because I'm somebody who's outside, you know, I don't know the canon that well. I've only seen a couple of stories here and there. I watched The Web Planet, and I have the DVD of Horrors of Fang Rock. I'm going to get to it eventually. But besides that, I've only really seen the movies. So glad to hear that that someone who is an expert at the canon of it likes it, because I was like, I don't know if this is going to be like the thing where I'm going to be like, hey, I like it. Everyone else can be, yeah, you're an idiot. You don't know the real Doctor Who.
Well, Joe, you're right, because it went straight into the action. It literally went straight in there. We've got Bernard Cribbins's, I hope I'm right, Ramona. Was it Bernard Cribbins, the actor who played the companion? And he went straight in there, you know, straight in going, oh my gosh, Batardi, what is this place? And he joined in right away. Amazing. Yeah,
did not waste any time. You have a robbery going on right away. You have Bernard Cribbins going right in and immediately seeing the doctor. And I guess when you see Bernard Cribbins, you kind of have to figure this is going to lean into comedy a little bit, because he's one of the, you know, funniest men in the history of television. Even, I mean, that Fawlty Towers episode where John Cleese confuses him for the restaurant critic is one of the funniest things I've ever seen. So yeah, this goes right into the action. I really like that about it. There's a lot more going on, and I'm sure we're going to get into the various goings on later as we go through this. But yeah, I really enjoyed it a lot more than the first one. I thought the first one was very slow, but of course I watched it because of Peter Cushing. He's one of my favorite actors. Yeah. So I'm glad to see that this one was enjoyed as well by someone who knows this stuff better than I do.
Ramona?
I unfortunately didn't have access to a streaming service that had the film on.
Oh.
But I've seen some of Mr. Cushing's work, and he does quite a few horror movies, a big folder of horror movies. And
did he do Terror Train?
A movie to watch.
That's
the one.
A movie to watch if you like Cushing as Doctor Who is Biggle's Adventures in Time.
Oh.
One of his last ones,
Yeah, excellent film.
Mm. It's in the mid-80s, so it's very late in his career. Right? It might have been his final film, actually, if I remember correctly. I know he died in 1994, but he wasn't really working much after, you know, beyond the 1980s.
He was in Star Wars, Moff Tarkin.
Yeah, that was 77. That was about a decade after this.
I love the hologram they did for him in Star Wars.
Yeah. Or the new version. You mean the new version of him in, what was it? Was it in Rogue One? Was it in the second one. The second one of the new trilogy. I don't remember the name of it.
There's been so many.
Oh no! I think it was Rogue One where they brought back somebody as Peter Cushing, and they did a great job making him look like Peter. I think leaving the theater, I haven't seen it since I went to the theater for it. I think the one thing that there is a little bit of an uncanny valley, but I think he even got the voice down pretty decently.
Hmm.
And I don't know, you know, I mean, I know it's fairly recent. I don't know how much of that was AI versus an actor who is doing it, and then maybe they sweetened it a little bit in audio to make him sound more like Peter, but great job.
What about you, Craig? What did you think?
I watched this back to back at the Phoenix Cinema with David recently, last year actually, and it was so cool to see it on the cinema screen. It was just, the Daleks are just beautiful, and I love the spaceship, the flying spaceship that looks like a Mercedes car.
I loved it. I thought that was found.
it stands up. I mean, it doesn't look too bad. I mean, the effects, you know, that they did. And my favorite scenes are, I think, the bit where the man does a runner and he gets fire extinguished by the Daleks, and then he pulls off a fruit and veg stall. But I also found out, though, in the actual production, I think he broke his ankle when he fell onto the bricks.
Oh,
so I always see that and go, oh god, that must have hurt. But my other favorite scene is when is it Roberta Tovey, when she's in the little 1960s van and they do a runner, and then they bash into all the Daleks in the street and blow them up sort of thing. That was one of my favorite scenes. And I love seeing the gold Dalek and the black Dalek. I got confused because I was thinking, like, which one is actually in charge? I got a bit confused. normally it's obvious, but it was a bit tricky. And even the Dalek coming out of the water, that was just like, oh, wow. You know, by London Bridge in the Thames, and then there's a post that says, "You're forbidden to dump bodies in the river," in the thing. But yeah, that's a couple of my highlights that I liked from the movie. My only gripe, I'm not keen on the score, the musical score. I think it was too sort of brash. But I get it because it was 1966, so. Mm. You know, it's not going to be Kef McCulloch, is it? You know, or Dominic Glynn.
It felt a little too upbeat at times for me. Like, there's the part where, man, I do not remember the character's name, but there's one part where the little girl is watching this one guy get killed, who's trying, and it just goes right back to like this bouncy, happy music, and I'm like, that just seems like. There was no time to emotionally address this character who just got murdered by the Daleks. We're just gonna go right back to jumping in the van and a chase and like all this like upbeat music. It felt like it wasn't the right score. Like it didn't hit the right emotional points for what they were trying to show us.
Do you remember?
So I totally agree with you on that. It felt out of place.
What about when the Robo-Men were? It was impersonating a Robo-Man and they all sat down and then this quirky music came on like a comedy score and they were trying to eat a sandwich or something. And it was like, and then you think,
he's watching the
end of the world is at here.
And there's so many random scenes like that within there, but it was really strange at times, but there was a little fandom going on here, which I really enjoyed. There's an actress who was the old woman in the hut when they took them in. And she was playing the old woman. Her name is Eileen Way. And many, many, many years later, she played in Russell T. Davies's Century Falls as the Century herself, which was on the CBBC channel many years later. I only found that out yesterday afterwards when I looked it up.
Century Falls is £20 in CEX if you try and get up a rogue copy of that.
I've got it, Craig. It's brilliant.
£20.
The younger woman in the cabin looked familiar to me, but I couldn't place her.
Was that the one, the younger lady?
Yeah, the younger woman. She's probably been in a bunch of Hammer films or something. That's probably where I know her from.
Mm.
But I couldn't place her. I felt like I recognized her face. And I'm using the phone right now for the podcast, so I can't just like go on IMDb and look at who she is.
Jill Curzon.
What's up?
Jill Curzon.
Yeah, can you see what else she's been in where I might have known her from?
I'd have to Google it. I'd have to Google.
Yeah, I couldn't place where she was from. One thing about the little robo, they kind of looked like Judge Dredd. Have you ever seen?
Yes, I was wondering if I saw those people before because of the whole
yeah, the red and black.
Yes. I can't think of the word.
Jill Curzon was in The Saint and The Champions. and the Hugh and I.
Oh, I love The Champion.
In the 60s.
None of which I would have seen her in. So maybe it's some random horror movie I've seen her in, and that's where she's from.
Mm.
But yeah, I could swear I've seen her face before. Haven't seen it. I've seen some of the Saint movies from the 40s, but I've never seen the 60s TV series. So I don't know.
And these Daleks as well, they have bigger lights on their heads instead of the little indicator lights. And it always looks much cooler. And I don't know why they didn't incorporate that into the TV series.
That's true, actually. You're absolutely right. I agree with you there. I agree. Also liked the way that he took him back to his proper time. Few minutes before the robbery happened, but I was hoping that he was going to join the doctor in his travels. I was really hoping he was going to join.
This is where it's going to get a little. Wouldn't that create a little bit of a time cop like paradox, though? Because you're bringing him back a couple minutes before the robbery so he could stop it, But what if he runs into the other version of himself that's already there? Because if you don't take him back to specifically the same point where you took him out, wouldn't that now mean that there's two of Bernard Cribbins running around London at the same time? Wouldn't that create a little bit of a, you know, oh my God, if you cross paths with them.
We would have had the Reapers a whole lot sooner.
this sequel had a 60% increase in budget compared to the original. And I think it shows.
Mm.
Well, this one was out more. It was like the first one felt stuffy because it was constantly indoors, and man, that first one, you could feel the low budget on that first movie. But by this point,
you're right, because the first one was all indoors and there were no, and it was like you say, it was very slow paced. It was very, you know, I thought it was not going anywhere at times, but the second one, you knew the story for some reason, you engaged more. With the story, I thought.
By this point, though, you know, this is where, you know, the love of Amicus Films comes in. This is after they've had like a string of like huge hits, so they were making a hell of a lot of money at this point. So they could afford to drop more money on a Doctor Who sequel. The first one did well, and by this point, they had now made Doctor Terror's House of Horrors, which was an amazingly successful film for them. Completely changed the course of the studio from making these tiny low budget movies to actually having decent budgets, and they had started doing co-productions at this point with, or maybe not yet with 20th Century Fox. That might have been in the 70s, but by this point they were starting to work with Seven Arts. They were starting to work with Warner Brothers, so they had more money coming in, so they were able to beef up the budgets for some of these movies. And we've been covering, and we will be covering more of the Amicus films. We're doing Torture Garden and House That Drip Blood in a couple of weeks on Literary License. So I'll get into more detail with that later on that. But they were, at this point, money was flowing really, really well for the company. It's a couple years before they started kind of faltering financially, and there started to be infighting between Subotsky and Rosenberg. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, it is Subotsky. Well, I don't know why I was getting them confused with AIP there for a second. Or I thought I was. So yeah, this was a good point in time for them. They had an influx of money. They were making better looking projects at this point, and it's still a couple years away from when they started to kind of fall down the cracks. And you'll see that later on with At the Earth's Core and stuff, where they had no money, and you could see they had no money by the time they get to those.
And this was released on a set, the Dalek Mania box set in 2001, and the local link that I've got is that they filmed the cinema scenes at the Odeon in Muswell Hill in the
film. Oh, wow.
And that's where they filmed the entrance for the cut scenes in that. So I know there's a lot of my local neighborhoods listening in, so that's the local link I've got for you guys.
And if you're in the United States, they're on Blu-ray from, I believe, Scream Factory, so you can get them there. And they're worth picking up, because, I mean, as much as I say the first movie's slow, it's still likable because you have a likable set of core characters and likable actors in the roles. There's always at least something worth watching with them. And this one especially is very good.
I could watch it again.
This one definitely I could watch multiple times. Yes. The first one, maybe not.
I agree with you, Joe.
I would have liked Bernard Cribbins' character to have stayed like static throughout the whole series, where he came back to be in that same character from the Dalek movie. It's, you know, that would have been really cool. But I get it; it's a movie and it's separate to, and it, but I know it's canon. But you know, it would have been sweet though if he was, you know, still the same character.
Oh, are these movies canon? I've always read that they're not.
Well, I'm not sure.
Yeah, what do you guys think? Because I suppose it's like the Eighth Doctor, isn't it? You know, or the Ninth. See, I include the Ninth Doctor as Richard E. Grant from the cartoon. He always gets sidetracked.
There is a plug for this plot hole, and that has already been used, so it's usable. And that is, it's an agency false memory.
I like the false memory bit. That's quite good. That's really, really good, Ramona. Sometimes it happens in the Big Finish audio series as well, with Charlie Pollard versus the Sixth Doctor and the Eighth Doctor as well at the same time.
So you false can blame the agency for that.
Blame the agency.
As someone who's not as well versed in Doctor Who, this movie, like I said, it leans into comedy quite a bit, and I think we have, Bernard Cribbins to maybe thank for that, because he does a lot of stuff that's, pretty hilarious in this. Does the series lean into comedy as much?
Not as much. Not
it depends on the incarnation of the Doctor and who's his actors. Or companions.
Yeah.
Well, Fourth Doctor was at times funny, but on a dime, he will knock your socks off. The Second Doctor was Cosmic Hobo.
I kind of feel like even Peter Cushing's performance here seems to be he seems to play him at times, maybe more in the first movie than this one. He seems to play him a little bit absent-minded at times.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys feel that way about it too.
He wasn't like an absent-minded doctor, the first doctor, William Hartnell. Well, he appears to be absent-minded, but then he'll just switch stuff up and then you'll be like, Jesus, like, wow. You know.
The classic trope of a character who's really, really, ahead.
You don't see him coming sort of thing, and you think, all right, he stuffs his lines up sometimes, but then the majority of the time he will be the grand master of all things.
kind of the classic character who's so smart that at times, like, his brain malfunctions from just being so overloaded. And that's the way I kind of saw Peter Cushing in the two movies, at least. Is there were points where I felt like, okay, he seems like he's playing him as like this absent-minded genius.
And he, I think my uncle was mentioned it as well in the movies. He actually, this TARDIS was built. He actually built this TARDIS on Earth. So that's why it was different to the series. But, yeah.
But I think especially with the first movie, that was more of a budget restraint. Maybe that's why Subotsky wrote that in the way he did, was, I know I'm not going to have a lot of money to do this. And in a movie, you can't get away with a lot of the things that you can get away with on television. Like on television, if things don't necessarily, like if they don't necessarily look expensive, it doesn't matter as much. But in a movie, you can't have something look cheap. Is that? So I think he couldn't get away with that, and that's why they had to kind of maybe write it to have him build it on Earth.
Unless it's the Blair Witch Project.
Oh, Blair Witch Project is something very,
oh,
very...
that's freaky.
Oh. I just have visions of the girl's nostrils.
Just boring snot.
A lot to blame for that.
Just snot pouring out as she's looking down at the camera, and I can't believe I did this. I'm so sorry I did this. God, I haven't seen that movie in ages either.
We won't talk about the sequel then.
I seen the sequel. I didn't hate it as much as everyone else did, but now it's been, 25 years since I've seen it, because I only saw it when it first came out. So I don't know how I would feel about it today. I get that way sometimes. Like, I'll rewatch a movie after like 20 years and be like, I don't know why I hated this, or I don't know why I like this. There's movies now that I watched, and I'm like, I watched recently an old Don the Dragon Wilson direct-to-video movie with my roommate. Like, no, dude, we got to watch this. It was really good. I remember really liking it as a kid. And then we're both, like, falling asleep. It's like, what the hell? Nothing's happening. I just remember, just as a kid, I just remember the action scenes, and that's it.
Gotta be Dungeons and Dragons.
That movie, there's another one. I haven't seen the first Dungeons and Dragons since it first came out. But it was Ring of Fire was the one that I was talking about. So it was like this cheap little action film, and I really pushed it to my roommate. I'm like, let's watch it. And I was like, fuck, I feel like an idiot.
Well, I watched The Ring recently, and after I watched it, I thought, what on earth was I worried about? Like, all right, she comes out of a well and she comes out of the TV, but I was sitting there thinking, why was I so petrified when I first saw this movie?
Well, how old were you?
Probably about 20.
Oh, my word. I got scared of what life for me.
Not of the TV. Is she going to come out of the plumbing?
Yeah, I remember I took my brother's girlfriend at the time had a couple of young kids, and I remember I took her daughter to see it. It was PG-13. I was like, all right, how bad could it be? And the little girl was like 9 or 10 years old. So I'm like, okay, it's not too far off from where it should be. She was terrified, but she wanted to watch it again as soon as the video came out. As soon as it came out on VHS, she's like, let's go get the video. I'm like, all right, let's go. You're going to be scared? No, but she kept watching it and watching it. I think maybe because she wanted to overcome the fear of Samara coming out. But
and yet when I rewatched Stephen King's It, the original, that film still freaks me out to this day. I'll just avoid clowns and balloons.
Oh no, I hate clowns. I really do.
What did you think of the two new movies then, if you like the original 1990 version?
I like them as well. Yeah.
You like both of them? Because I hate the second one.
They still scare me.
Really? Yeah. All right. Yeah, for the new ones, I really loved It Chapter 1, and then when Chapter 2 came out, I left the theater just hating that movie.
And does anyone happen to know the differences in ratings or from the first to the second at all?
No, I tried looking for them the other day and nothing really came up regarding those. Which is very strange, because usually they would have how much money they made from that film or from both sides, really, and nothing really came up on the fandom or on the actual page itself. But I could just Google it again to be sure.
Budget was 286.
Let's have a look. I'm just checking now. Let's have a look.
They did the sequel very quickly.
Did they?
It's almost like when they filmed Superman 1 and 2, like back to back. That's what it felt. And
Back to the Future 2 and 3 as well. They did those back to back, if I remember.
Man, if you want to
spy in Colombia.
No, it doesn't say, actually.
Yeah, unfortunately, the Amicus book that I have by me only covers their horror films. So it only makes like a scant mention of the Doctor Who movies. So I don't have any of that either. There's another book that I have, but it's in my storage locker in LA, and I'm in Chicago right now, so I'm not able to look at it, because that covered every single Amicus movie. That might have the information, but doesn't do me any good right now.
Well, anyone listening who knows, please send us a message. Just let us know.
But yeah.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I give it a 10.
What about anything you didn't like about the film that didn't make any sense, or that you thought, oh, it didn't really, wasn't really good? Or
I thought it was quite good. I didn't really feel like there was anything wrong with it.
Anything that I would complain about with this movie would kind of feel nitpicky, because it would be like the logic. The spaceship is chasing you, so you get out of the van and run into an open field. Doesn't make any sense to do, so why would the characters do it? And then the ship doesn't see them running, blows up the van, which is sitting there in an open field with open doors, so clearly they're not in there, but you blow up the van anyway. Like, that stuff, I mean, but that's cheesy as it is. I don't think it's anything that like necessarily takes away from this movie. Like, it's actually an enjoyable, I think it's actually a very enjoyable film.
All right, so should we move on to ratings?
If you guys are ready, I am.
So am I. I'll give it a 10.
We're doing out of 10, so I'll give it about a 7. Because, yeah, it is entertaining. It's not perfect. It's got, you know, it's got its issues, but it's very, well, maybe 8. 8 out of 10. It's very, very entertaining. Peter Cushing is always, I always enjoy watching him. There's very rare, you know, few rare movies where even he couldn't carry me through. Like, there was a movie he made a little later called Tender Dracula that I'm like, this is just one of the most boring things ever. And the Satanic Rites of Dracula, those two are god awful. But it's very rare that I don't like a movie that Peter Cushing's in, because he can at least, just his charisma can get you through. And this one also, you had Andrew Keir, who I really enjoy watching, and Bernard Cribbins, who made it really, really funny and brought the comedic elements out of it. They even did an I Love Lucy thing late in the movie, where with the conveyor belt with all the food, and Bernard Cribbins and the other woman are just kind of trying to grab it. I guess the only other thing that it didn't make sense to me that they didn't see the old lady and the woman in the cabin. They didn't they seem so suspicious from the second you arrive that it kind of was like, how do you not see that these people are clearly going to turn on you?
And then they open the door and there's a Dalek at the front door.
Yeah. I mean, the whole time they look suspicious the entire time. So why do you trust them? But, and
In that scene, I thought she was going to start stealing the food as well, because she was really tempting to take the bread. I thought it was all to kick off, but it didn't happen.
You mean the little girl right when they first go in, because way she's looking at the bread, and then the younger woman in the cabin tells the old lady, let them have some of the soup.
Mm.
Yeah.
And that soup looked very hot. It looked lava.
But everything in this movie looked kind of dirty. Like, I don't know if I'd trust the plates in that cabin.
I'd give this film maybe an 8.5, because I like the style and the shine of everything, the costumes and the Daleks were awesome in this. Yeah, that would be my score.
So overall, really enjoyable for all of us, apparently.
Yeah, Ramona.
I did not get to see it. I abstained from putting in a score.
Okay.
Yeah, hopefully there's a way for you to check it out. I mean, there's got to be. Yeah, it seems the rest of us all enjoyed it. Hopefully there's some way that you can see it.
It'll turn up in a few years.
Even here in the United States, it's not streaming on any service I had. I was lucky to just have the Blu-ray and I just popped it in. So, I don't know.
Oh, I found some. There was Peter Cushing was sick during the production of this.
Oh, that I didn't know.
They had to read some of the script. It doesn't say what the actual illness was. But there was a fire. A Dalek caught on fire when they stormed the spaceship, and yeah, it was stuntman Eddie Powell who broke his ankle when he fell off the thing. And actor Andrew Keir hurt his wrist when punching through the van windscreen when they escaped during the chase of the Daleks in the streets in that van. So yeah.
Yeah, why did Andrew Keir suddenly in the last scenes we see him in, suddenly he had a very thick Irish accent that he didn't have the entire rest of the movie?
He thought, oh shit, I'm just gonna give it up now.
I just remembered that now when you mentioned him, like right at the end of the movie, suddenly he's Irish. Suddenly he has a very thick Irish accent. As far as Peter Cushing getting ill and them having to rewrite, that would make sense. Because you did have a lot more Bernard Cribbins in this than I thought you would have. So I guess if Peter Cushing got ill during the production and you needed to get this movie done right away, that explains why they did a lot of the business that Cribbins was doing. It seemed like some of that stuff was ad lib, like the conveyor belt I Love Lucy thing with all the food, him eating with the other robots. Maybe that stuff was put in because it's like, look, we gotta fill this movie out because our star is out sick.
Because in the original movie, we had Roy Castle as the comedy aspect.
He was
the
comedy relief in that.
I just remember him wiggling his bum trying to come out of a door that with no floor.
Man, Amicus really loved using the same people a lot, because Roy Castle and Peter Cushing are in Dr. Terror's House of Horrors together.
I love that film.
So yeah, John Pertwee and Peter Cushing are together in The House That Dripped Blood. So they like using a lot of the same people a lot.
All right. Well, I know we had some technical problems at the start. But I was just going to let you guys know of my, I've got a show on at the moment, and it's an art show with my aluminium prints and my mum's Yvonne Johnson's pictures of the Spriggan from Parkland Walk, which is a, it's a huge sculpture coming out of the disused train tunnels of a Spriggan, which is a eater of children's souls. There's also a picture of this ancient tree with the roots that are so thick coming through the bricks, and what people, what the kids have done, they've graffitied bricks onto the roots. So it looks like a brick wall, but it's actually graffiti. And the theme is spring. So I've got a lot of springtime flower shots and stuff. And it's on for a month at the Muswell Hill Health Club in 140 Fortis Green. And it's open Monday to Friday, 6:30 till a.m. till 10 p.m. at night. And Saturdays, 8 a.m. till 7 p.m. And Sundays, 8 till 5. And it's free entry. And it's on for a month if you guys want to check it out, if you're local. And you can check out my stuff on Etsy at Craig's World. And or check out the merchandise. David Grant's got his limited edition drawings, and I've got them on t-shirts and hoodies at craigsworld.org. But feel free to plug any of your stuff that needs plugging.
Yeah, so I've got the Unwanted Guests, the Sir Benedict Files, and Unexplained Anomaly books. They're all on Kindle. The Unwanted Guests is on paperback. A Werewolf Story, the Sir Benedict Files, also on paperback and Kindle. And Unexplained Anomalies, about a TV host and a keeper of a mysterious book, is on Kindle as well. So please go and check those out and look forward to my new story in late summer.
All right. And as for me, I'm on Literary License Podcast. I'll be doing, again, we'll be doing Enchanted and Bedknobs and Broomsticks. And then we'll be doing more Amicus movies, The House of Drip Blood and Torture Garden. So we get a lot more Peter Cushing coming your way the next couple of weeks. And what else? I just did the Spoiler Room podcast. Last night we covered the 1951 remake of M, directed by Joseph Losey. Next Monday night we'll be doing live the original 1931 version of M by Fritz Lang. What else am I doing? God, I feel like joerendazzo.substack.com to check out my blog as I'm getting more active in that. I think that's it right now. Like, I feel like a million things that I could be plugging, but right now those are the three.
It's really good to have you, Joe.
Really great to be here. Hopefully I'll be able to do one of these again in the near future.
And you need to mentor Mario, because he's a novice to horror films, so you need to mentor him. He's not seen the Lost Boys yet.
No, I haven't watched it. Do you know what? Funnily enough, everybody on the podcast, I'm actually scared of horror, but funny thing is, everyone, I write horror stories, which is very bizarre. It's really strange.
Well, you know, you have right now, because you know you're part of the podcast family here at Literary License. There's the, we are doing, I think it's next Friday, a week from Friday, we're recording two more Amicus movies starring Peter Cushing. John Pertwee is in The House That Drip Blood. So yeah, maybe that could be your kind of like your way, like an easy way in to where you already are familiar with some of these people. So maybe that could be your way of kind of bridging the gap, because I find that's the best way to learn about movies. Is I like this,
I would love
this
to person. Join you. I would love to join you. Yeah,
yeah. Talk to Keith, and we'll get you on. Yeah, check him out for next Friday.
Excellent.
I'm going to recommend a Cushing movie that might be a starter for you, and okay. That would be Escape from Terror Island.
Oh, that's nice. Watched The Mummy. I watched The Mummy with Peter Cushing as well. And also, I watched Dracula with him too. So I've got those two, because I've been in, since watching the movies, I've been wanting to watch more Peter Cushing stuff. And, you know, he's top notch at the moment.
I love him, the gentleman of horror. Ramona, is that the one with the turtle creatures that you're talking about?
Right. The one with the cancer cells, the mutated cancer cells, that when they show them doing mitosis, it looks like a concentrate of chicken noodle soup. As they're doing the mitosis.
Here, that was called Island of Terror. So like, sometimes the retitlings that I need to be clear with you guys is like which one was which, because it could get, because there was Night of the Big Heat. That's the one where the Christopher Lee and Peter Cushing are trapped on an island where like there's this insane heat wave that's kind of killing everybody. So like I kind of, even with Dracula, you guys have it as Dracula. In the United States, it's The Horror of Dracula. So sometimes I have to remember that they have different titles. Like, you know, These Are the Damned versus The Damned.
Yeah.
And that's just because they felt that these titles were more marketable in the United States in that way. But yeah, I totally agree with that. That's one of my favorite Peter Cushing movies. That's anything he does with Christopher Lee is at least fun, except for The Satanic Rites of Dracula. I cannot, for the life of me, get through that movie in one sitting without falling asleep.
Was it really bad?
They couldn't decide if they wanted it to be a Bond parody, because Christopher Lee as Dracula through most of the movie comes off like a Bond villain. And it's very, very strange. And it's set in, you know, modern day, 1973. Most of the Peter Cushing, Christopher Lee Dracula movies I really, really like, though. It's just the last one I just do not like for anything.
And how about yourself, Ramona? You've got the Poovians podcast group.
I've been keeping going with that, and I've also been trying to fill out Mario's group, Books and Lattes, with the story that about 10 years ago, and just sharing a few pages of it. Just keep the group going.
Thank you so much, Ramona. It means a lot. Thank you so much for your support as well. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And if you are a Who fan and you want to follow us, please join our Facebook group, the Whovians Podcast. It's free to join. So that brings us to the end of the Literary License Podcast, Daleks 2150 AD. So it's good night from me.
And it's good night from me.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, all.
Or human beings. Out of the clouds, down from the sky, something is here. We don't know why. Could be a threat. Let's put up a fight. We gotta protect the moon so tonight. Set up perimeters here, right now. Move our defenses there. Get down. Extraterrestrials all around. They're hovering over our town. Watch out. Oh, falling from the stars. A distant galaxy. Oh, we're not sure who they are. Friend or enemy.
Today for all of this to go down. Take my hand, I'll get you somewhere safe until we figure this out.
I'll handle myself, thanks anyways, Boo. We don't even know what they came here to do. This could be the start of something new. And if it's the end,
at least I'm with you.
Oh, falling from the stars. A distant galaxy. Oh, we're not sure who they are. Friend or enemy.
Thank you.
Eliza, I don't know what's gonna happen, but you should know. I like you.
Sorry, you got out there, what?
I like you, I really like you.
Oh, what was that? Oh.
Search the scout ship.
Precisely what I was thinking.
Yeah, we know Ali, because we can read each other's minds.
Jinx on you.
This is Scout Commander 15-09. I proudly report my mission is complete. For centuries, we have been without a home, but I found Utopia, the perfect new planet for our people. I hid the coordinates in the most precious thing in Seabrook.
In Shumomo.
You must find the most precious thing in Seabrook. Find the most precious thing, precious thing in Seabrook.
The file is corrupted.
We need to find their most precious thing. That's where we'll find our map to Utopia.
Right now.
Move our defenses there.
Get down.
Extraterrestrials all around.
They come to take over our town.
Watch out.